stand still.
Well, welcome everyone to Rebel Madman Radio here at Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. Welcome here on the third day of June in the year of 2023. And today we're going to jump into a subject that everyone knows about. At least they know what happened, but they know it happened, but they don't know all of the particulars around it. And that will be none other than the execution of Abraham Lincoln. But before we jump into that, let's take care of some housekeeping here. Pardon me. Folks, freedom of speech is becoming more and more scarce, with more and more restrictions being brought down on what you can say and what you cannot say. And Republic Broadcasting is one of the last bastions of free speech left to us. So I would ask you, if there's any way possible, that you support RBN, support the advertisers at RBN, and do what you can. I don't know another way to say it, but I guess you could just ask yourself, how important is free speech to me in America? Well, today, as I said, we're going to be talking about the execution of Abraham Lincoln, and this is a pretty detailed subject, so I will only be taking calls the last 30 minutes of the program. So please give me time to thoroughly develop this subject. After we finish, I think you will understand my differentiation of the words assassination and execution. But anyway, this is really kind of strange because we look at a man, and I want to throw a premise at you here that's probably going to upset some people, but Lincoln was not president of the United States. Because there was no United States from 1860 to 1877, almost 17 years. There was no United States. There was the northern states, there were the southern states, because if you will remember, the southern states were not allowed to come in Reconstruction for quite some time, and until they had ratified several of the provisions, including the 14th Amendment, which was never properly ratified, and a few other things. But let's also remember that Lincoln wasn't that popular in the North. He sure wasn't popular in the South, but he wasn't that popular in the North. He closed down over 300 newspapers. He put thousands of people in prison without charges. And let's not forget that the first three states which he militarily invaded were still in the Union. And he invaded those three states and took over their state legislatures militarily to ensure that they did not secede. Because stop and think about it. Had Maryland, Kentucky, and Missouri, had those three states seceded, and those were the three states he invaded, had those three states seceded, the North would have been in one mel of a hess, as they used to say. And ironically, all of the hatred that was directed against him, even in the North, upon his execution, he suddenly became a hero. Isn't that funny how that happens? And one of his biographers has referred to him, and let me quote, the most gentle, most magnanimous, most Christ-like ruler of all time, unquote. So that's, okay. So, but when we talk about the United States, could we not say that Jefferson Davis was president of the United States just as well? Because he had states that were united under him. So just, and I realize that's just simple nomenclature. But let's look at some simple facts. Lincoln only received 39.8% of the vote in 1860, and he probably would not have been elected at all had not the Democratic Party split. And was that intentional? Was that done by subterfuge? It's been done in several states that I know of by subterfuge to split the opposition. Well, the one thing that most everyone knows is that Abraham Lincoln was executed by the famed actor and Southern sympathizer John Wilkes Booth on the evening of April the 14th, 1865, which just happened to be Good Friday. And just 5 days earlier, General Robert E. Lee had surrendered to Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox, signaling an end to the unfathomably bloody war of Northern aggression. And do we know that the assassination of Lincoln was a part of a larger conspiracy that allegedly was designed to also execute General Grant, Vice President Andrew Johnson, Secretary of State William Seward, and Secretary of War Edwin Stanton at the same time? Well, this alleged plot, which is part of the official history when you delve into it, obviously had to involve more people than just John Wilkes Booth. Now, nine of those people faced trial as co-conspirators, eight by a military tribunal. They were not tried in civilian courts. They were not allowed to present evidence. They were not allowed to speak. And those co-conspirators were Mary Surratt, David Harold, George Atzerodt, Dr. Samuel Mudd, Samuel Arnold, Michael O'Loughlin, Edward Spangler, and Lewis Payne or Lewis Powell. He went by both names. And one who later stood trial alone in a civilian court, not a military court, was John Surratt, Mary Surratt's son. And he was found not guilty in a civilian court some time later when he was finally allegedly found, although they really weren't looking for him that diligently, I promise you. And we'll get into that. Well, four of those people were executed. Three received life sentences. One was given a six-year prison term, and as I just stated, John Surratt was found not guilty in the only trial that was presented before a civilian court where evidence could be presented. Well, as for Booth, allegedly he was captured and gunned down at Garrett's Barn on April the 26th, 1865, but no one was ever allowed to see his body. So how do we know if it was him? Well, what I have just given you is the rather official narrative of the Lincoln execution. Now, it's a bit unusual, I'm sure, because it explicitly acknowledges a conspiracy surrounding the death of a president. And naturally, when we think of that, we think of JFK. And when I was a senior in high school when JFK was assassinated, or maybe executed. If we could only get the information released from the FBI and other sources, we might be able to really discern that for ourselves all these years later. But anyway, I can remember all of the parallels that were drawn after the Kennedy assassination between the Kennedy and the Lincoln assassination. But many of the details are left out of both stories, but we stop and think of it on several occasions. It's almost been as if John Wilkes Booth was just another Lee Harvey Oswald or a lone nut assassin. But Booth was hardly a lone nut, and there was, in fact, a conspiracy at the heart of the Lincoln assassination. although the people targeted by the government were not the real conspirators. The people who actually planned the execution of Abraham Lincoln were the members of his own cabinet. Now, I know that's going to be a little hard for people to swallow, but Lincoln had served his purpose for the Marxist-run and Marxist-controlled Republican Party of the country. And he was about to step in it, and pardon me, and what he was about to do was not acceptable to these radical Republicans at all. And that was after Lee had surrendered to Grant, and we'll get into it in really good detail here in a few minutes, but Lincoln actually contacted a judge who had been a former Supreme Court judge from Virginia, but he had resigned when Virginia seceded. So he had got in contact with the judge, and he had talked with him about bringing the southern states back in as brothers, as if they had never left. And that went totally contrary to the plans of these radical Republicans. So, and we'll get into that in a little more detail, as I said. But let's skip ahead and look at some of the forgotten aftermath of the execution. There's always a lot to learn by examining those details and looking into the conspiracies. Well, first of all, let's begin with a Sergeant Thomas Boston Corbett, spelling last name C-O-R-B-E-T-T. Now, if we could draw the analogy, he could be the Jack Ruby of the Lincoln assassination. Corbett was a strange character if there ever was one. Well, and you say, okay, well, what made him strange? Well, he allegedly castrated himself in 1858, and he opted not to seek medical attention until he had tended to other apparently more important business. A little strange, is it not? But that's in the official records. He was widely considered to be mentally unbalanced, shockingly enough, and he often had spoken of hearing voices. He was mockingly referred to by his fellow soldiers as, I quote, the glory to God man, due to his rather unorthodox religious beliefs, which he was not at all timid about sharing with others. But due to his bizarre behavior and his unwillingness to follow orders, Corbett was court-martialed and discharged from the army. For some unexplained reason, though, he was allowed to re-enlist in 1863 and rose to the rank of sergeant. Now, in April of 1865, he was the only man assigned to protect the president. No, wait a minute. I'm out of place here. He was the guy, pardon me, looking at my notes. He was the guy who personally shot and killed Booth, allegedly. Now, Corbett was never reprimanded or disciplined for his actions, and in fact, he profited handsomely touring the country for years as the man who killed Booth. In 1877, Corbett was appointed as the doorman of the Kansas State Legislature. Things didn't go so well for him, and according to some reports, one day he just decided to shoot the place up, though other accounts say that he didn't fire his weapon but merely brandished it and issued threats to the legislature. Whatever the case, he quickly found himself committed to a mental asylum. He managed to escape, and though he may have been briefly surfaced in Texas, depending on your sources, he was never to be seen or heard from again. Next, I think it's critical for us to think about who was supposed to have been in that box with Lincoln and Mary Todd was none other than Ulysses S. Grant and his wife. It had been advertised in the newspaper that they were going to be with Lincoln. And, of course, very quickly, the play sold out. Now, if you look at the circumstances, obviously the majority of people wanted to see the victor, the man who had led the North to victory, more than they wanted to see the president. Again, he was not that popular. But even though they had consented to be there, kind of at the last minute, they decide, no, they're going to get on a train and go visit their children. Now, in what world does that happen? But let's look at who was in the box with them. It was one Major Henry Rathbone and his paramour, Clara Harris. And they were sharing the presidential box at Ford's Theater with Abraham and Mary. At the time, as I said, Rathbone was dating Harris, who was both Rathbone's stepsister and the daughter of the U.S. Senator Ira Harris. Now, according to the reports, Rathbone was repeatedly deeply cut when he attempted to disarm and detain Booth, who escaped by leaping over the railing and onto the stage. But he never sought medical attention for these terrible cuts. Rathbone later married Harris, and the two started a family and moved to Germany, where Rathbone served as the U.S. consul to Hanover. Things didn't work out so well for them, because in December of 1883, Henry tried to kill his children, and when thwarted in that effort, instead shot and brutally carved up his wife Clara before turning the knife on himself. Like Corbett, he was sent off to an insane asylum. But unlike Corbett, Henry Rathbone spent the rest of his life in that insane asylum. So, now, here's two people that ended up in an insane asylum here. Is this a common denominator here? Well, let's not forget that Mary Todd Lincoln ended up in an insane asylum as well. But allegedly, Mary became more wacko after the assassination, exhibiting increasingly erratic behavior and suffering from vivid hallucinations. She was ultimately committed to a mental institution by her son and Abraham's son, Robert Todd Lincoln. Pardon me. To say that Robert Lincoln had some rather unusual aspects to his life story is one heck of an understatement. To begin with, we could note that he had the distinction of being the only man in history with direct links to three presidential assassinations. Just 21 when his father was gunned down, he subsequently was present at the assassination of James Garfield in 1881, and again near the when William McKinley in 1901. He was also the only Lincoln son to survive childhood. His brother Eddie died at age 3, brother Willie at age 11, and brother Tad barely made it to the age 18 before dying in 1871. Now, according to his own account, he was involved in a truly bizarre incident in late 1864, early 1865, not very long before the death of Abraham. The younger Lincoln was saved from serious injury and possible death when he was pulled to safety by a stranger during a mishap on a train platform. Well, get ready for irony, people. That stranger just happened to be Edwin Booth, the older brother of John Wilkes. Lincoln later maintained a long-term relationship or friendship and a possible romance with Lucy Hale, who was the daughter of U.S. Senator John Hale and a former paramour and fiancé of John Wilkes Booth. Oh, man, this thing's got more twists and turns than anybody can imagine. But speaking of Edwin Booth, on June the 9th, 1893, just as his casket was being carried for burial, Ford's Theater mysteriously collapsed, killing 22 people and injuring 68. The building had been converted into a government record storage facility, and some of the records of the assassination were lost in the wreckage. was that the precursor to Oklahoma City? Well, Edwin and John's sister, Rosalie Booth, died under mysterious circumstances in January of 1880. Rumors at the time spoke of a mysterious assailant. Edwin Booth Clark, a son of sister Asia Booth and therefore a nephew of John Wilkes Booth, attended Annapolis and became a U.S. naval officer who later disappeared at sea. Now, the official records say he committed suicide by jumping overboard. Well, then there was Junius Brutus Booth, the patriarch of the Booth clan, is said to have gone insane as well. Wow. Well, U.S. Senator Preston King, credited with being one of the guys who supposedly prevented a mercy petition on behalf of Mary Surratt from reaching President Andrew Johnson, decided on November the 12th, 1865, to go swimming in New York with a bag of bullets tied around his neck. Officially, his death was listed as a very innovative suicide. U.S. Senator James Lane, the other guy credited with supposedly preventing the mercy petition on behalf of Surratt from reaching Johnson, shot himself in the head while jumping from a carriage in Leavenworth, Kansas on July the 1st of 1866. Or else he slit his own throat. There are two stories out there. You get to choose which one you prefer. Oh, this one, I tell you, when you really start delving into this, this is absolutely crazy. Well, U.S. Senator John Conness, and I'll spell the name for you, C-O-N-N-E-S-S, who was likely, you know, he was a radical, one of those radical Marxist Republicans, and a likely conspirator, and who was even a pallbearer at Lincoln's funeral, was also committed to an insane asylum, where he later died. Now, how many people does that make who went wacko here? Well, the body of William Peterson, the owner of the boarding house where Lincoln was taken immediately after being shot and where he died the next morning, was found on the grounds of the Smithsonian Institute, loaded up with laudanum. His death, needless to say, was ruled a suicide. Now, folks, I'm telling you all of this because this, too, parallels all of the mysterious deaths surrounding the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Well, Colonel William Browning, who was Vice President Andrew Johnson's personal secretary, as well as being a personal friend of John Wilkes Booth, is believed to have been murdered, though details of that are really hard to come by. Well, less hard to come by are the details of the murders of Frank Boyle and William Watson, both of whom had the misfortune of actually resembling John Wilkes Booth. Both of their bodies were turned over to the War Department by vigilantes for the reward that was being offered. Stanton's department, that's Secretary of War Edwin Stanton's, department covered up the murders by unceremoniously disposing of the bodies, one of which was dumped into the Potomac River. Oh my goodness, this one's fun. Frances Adeline Seward and Frances Adeline Fanny Seward had the misfortune of bearing witness to the staged attack on William Seward, the sitting Secretary of State and the husband of Frances and father of Fanny. Frances died of a reported heart attack on June the 21st, 1865, just a couple of months after Lincoln was executed. And then Fanny died the next year on October the 29th, 1866, on Halloween. She was 21. The cause of her death cannot be found, at least I couldn't locate it. A few years later, in 1870, William Seward legally adopted his young companion, Olive Risley, as his daughter. Risley was 26 at the time, and Seward was 69. there's some crazy stuff here, folks. And, of course, William Seward was a Mason. And because there is a picture of he and his little young paramour, who he adopted as a daughter. And but anyway, Seward is undoubtedly one of the conspirators involved in the Lincoln's execution. As Honest Abe Spymaster and head of the National Defense Police, which was the forerunner of the U.S. Secret Service, Baker had instituted a reign of terror, just as he had previously done as a member of San Francisco's Vigilance Committee, running roughshod over any laws or pretended laws, especially anything that one might have called constitutional. Under Baker's and Stanton's tyrannical watch, there were 260,000 very questionable arrests made, and some 38,000 people were held without trial as political prisoners, reference Lincoln's execution. Now, where have you ever heard that before? Baker also introduced such innovations as midnight raids, forced entry without warrants, imprisonment without bail, and summary arrest. Well, he would have fit in really good today, wouldn't he? With the police of today? Well, somewhere around 1867, Baker published a book revealing the existence of what was said to be Booth's diary. Now, Baker subsequently barricaded himself in his home and told friends that a secret cabal was after him and intended to kill him. Well, press reports from December 1867 through February 1868 tell of repeated attempts made on his life. He was shot at twice, stabbed on his own front porch, and beaten by three or four men who attempted to abduct him. Nevertheless, when he turned up dead on July the 3rd, 1868, his cause of death was said to be meningitis, which, ironically, at that time necessitated an immediate sealed burial. Really? Well, a later exhumation, though, indicated that the cause of death of Mr. Baker was arsenic poisoning. This sound like a real good mystery for you yet, guys? Baker left behind cryptic notes alluding to a conspiracy behind the Lincoln assassination involving 11 members of Congress, 12 U.S. Army officers, 3 U.S. Navy officers, 1 governor, 5 bankers, imagine that, 3 nationally known newspapermen, and 11 wealthy industrialists. Well, we'll talk about this on the other side, folks, and get back to it.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Gilad Atzmon says the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power.
Jewish power requires anybody in politics to understand it and know about it, but never talk about it.
My Awakening really sums up with the very best evidence, the facts and the truth about race, and the fact that race drives history, and the truth about the Jewish question.
The younger you get, the greater the percentage of people who identify as alphabet soup, you know, LGBTQ, RS.
This woman, she's like, oh yeah, I identify as a koala 2 years ago. And I'm like, what?
A koala?
What? Maybe if it was Quickie Koala, that might be cool, but otherwise, you know.
How about an N-word pass? Have you ever received an N-word pass from any of your black friends?
Biden invited a drag queen to come for the signing of the Respect for Marriage Act. It's the Respect for Anal Sex Act. So, yeah, I mean, let's just call it like it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Well, you're dead gum government, you sorry so-and-sos. You got your damn hands in every pocket of my clothes. Well, you're dead gum, dead gum.
No, I don't. I don't ever love the government. Don't want anything to do with it if I can avoid it at any expense. Well, before we came to the break, we were talking about one Lafayette Baker, who was head of the National Defense Police, which later would become the Secret Service. And we talked about his mysterious death, you know, allegedly from meningitis, which they had to immediately put him in a sealed coffin. But then when his body was exhumed later, it was determined that he died of arsenic poisoning. And he left behind quite a few notes. And then some were even found within the past 20 years, I believe, that are even more elusive. I mean, alluding to who was behind this. But he claimed that there was a huge assassination. And one of the things that was also found after his death was $200,000 in his possession. Now, folks, that was a lot of money. It's a lot of money today, but stop and think about in 1867, $200,000. Wow. Well, let's jump a little bit from here from old Lafayette Baker, and let's go to the police officer John F. Parker. Bet you guys never heard of him. But he had the dubious distinction of being the guy who was supposed to be guarding Lincoln at the time of his assassination, except that the good old police officer, John Parker, decided that he would wander over across the street and get drunk. Parker had a seriously checkered history with the police department, having been written up on multiple occasions for conduct unbecoming an officer, the use of abusive language, visiting houses of prostitution, inappropriately discharging his weapon, sleeping on duty, and being drunk on duty. Now, folks, somebody please tell me, why was he picked as the only person to be guarding the president? He was somehow assigned the task of guarding Lincoln, a development that historians are absolutely unable to explain anywhere. And he was assigned that task just in time to be neglecting his duties when Lincoln was executed. Now, here's the real kicker. He was never reprimanded in any way for abandoning his post and leaving the president vulnerable to the execution. Really? No punishment whatsoever. In fact, he was returned to duty at the White House, an honor usually reserved for senior officers with unblemished records. He was released from duty, though, in 1868, just after Edwin Stanton relinquished his post as Secretary of War. Now, would you not believe that since he was not reprimanded and then he was brought into the White House and he left the same time as Stanton, how smart do you have to figure out there may have been a connection here? Now, once he was released from that White House duty, according to the official records, he was never seen or heard from again. And it is believed that he was either executed or that he went into hiding somewhere to keep from being executed. Well, now let's take a look at the guy I believe who was the mastermind behind the assassination. And that was none other than Edwin Stanton, the Secretary of War, and a seriously deranged individual by any calculations. And I believe, and I think it can be proved, that he was actually running the presidency. Every president in our history has been a puppet. George Washington was Alexander Hamilton's puppet. You know, everybody is a puppet. Reagan was George H.W. Bush's puppet. They just have that. They are owned and controlled. But prior to his emergence, talking about Stanton, Stanton's greatest claim to fame was securing an acquittal for U.S. Representative Daniel Sickles on murder charges. Yes, Stanton was a lawyer. On February the 27th, 1859, Sickles had gunned down the unarmed Philip Barton Key II, who was the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia and the son of famed composer Francis Scott Key. Stanton argued a temporary insanity defense for the first time in U.S. judicial history. Well, the media at that time, apparently every bit as corrupt in those days as it is today, overwhelmingly supported Sickles while vilifying both Key and Sickles' wife, who had reportedly been having an affair. Though standing trial for a capital offense, Sickles was allowed to stay in his jailer's apartment, have unlimited visitors, and most amazingly, was allowed to keep a weapon. How many prisoners you know are allowed to keep a weapon? As already stated, Sickles was acquitted and was subsequently allowed to retain his seat in the House of Representatives. Politics always been crooked. Dadgum government. He later became a Civil War general and was the U.S. minister to Spain. Elsewhere in Stanton's biography, we find that at various times in his life, he had personally ordered the exhumation of at least two bodies, one of them being his own daughter, Lucy, who had been exhumed somewhere around 1842. Now, according to the reports, Stanton kept his daughter's decomposing body in a special container in his house for at least a year. Well, isn't that the automatic qualification for being Secretary of State? Stanton became a national figure when he was appointed by President Buchanan to serve as Attorney General on December the 20th, 1860, just a few weeks before Lincoln took office. He went on to wield considerable power in both the Lincoln and the Johnson administrations. Indeed, Andrew Johnson attempted dismissal of Stanton, led directly to his impeachment proceedings. So, you try to get rid of somebody on your staff, and the Congress, pardon me, and the Congress will impeach you. What does that tell you about the power of Edwin Stanton? Well, Stanton's reign came to an end on December the 24th of 1869 when he turned up dead of unstated causes. Though some reports claim suicide, just as his brother had reportedly done in 1846. Now, Stanton had been nominated for a seat on the U.S. Supreme Court by President Ulysses Grant and confirmed by the U.S. Senate, but he died before he could assume that position. Now, when you stop and think about this, folks, isn't that a whole lot of tragedy to befall a lot of people who were in a position to know more about the Lincoln assassination than one would might have thought? There was one guy, though, who saw his fortunes rise. Now, Major General Lew Wallace was a member of the hopelessly corrupt military tribunal that sat in judgment of Mary Surratt and the others. And in 1880, he became far better known as a writer of historical fiction when he wrote and published the book Ben-Hur, the best-selling novel of the 19th century. And even today, 150-some years later, it is still in print. Now, let's look at, you know, again, people that you may or may not have heard of. Have you heard of a man by the name of Francis Tumblety? I'll spell that name for you. T-U-M-B-L-E-T-Y. And you want to talk about weird news back then. Who was the wonderful doctor Francis Tumblety? And shouldn't he deserve some kind of place in history? Francis Tumblety's story is a pretty good one and really weird. Well, let's not forget Father Widget, W-I-G-E-T. I know you people have all heard of this, and I'm sorry for being redundant, but not much can be found about Father Widget either. And except that he happened to be the spiritual advisor for Mary Surratt, and he sat with her in her cell waiting to be executed and then died a couple of days later. Anybody freaked out with all this stuff yet? Well, let's go back to Francis Tumblety, who was arrested on May the 5th, 1865, on the suspicion of being complicit in the plot to assassinate Abraham Lincoln. Tumblety was an associate and, by some reports, a sometime employer of the executed conspirator, David Herold. His arrest was ordered by Secretary of War Edwin Stanton. To be fair to Tumblety, it should be noted that he was only one of some 2,000 people who were arrested as co-conspirators. 2,000 people. This is just incredible. Well, anyway, Tumblety was held for nearly a month before being released on May the 30th of 1865. And prior to his arrest, he had lived quite a weird life. Born in 1833 and raised in New York, Tumblety was widely viewed as a charlatan and a whack job. While still a minor, he reportedly peddled pornographic materials. Well, folks, what is it about pornography and child abuse and sexual Jeffrey Epstein type stuff? Why is it always connected with government? Well, no, that's an ancillary question. But Tumblety soon transformed into an Indian herb doctor who was run out of various parts of the country for running con games surrounding medicine. Oh, he would have fit right in. Maybe we could have put him in charge of vaccines. Well, In one reported case, he was directly involved in the death of a patient. Just one? No, he's a minor. You know, he needs to talk to Bill Gates. Though he suffered no repercussions for his actions. According to one account, he kept a collection of human uteruses on display in his Washington, D.C. home. Yep, folks, you heard that right, and I ain't going to repeat it. Some 23 years after his arrest in Washington, Tumblety took up lodging in, of all places, a boarding house in London's Whitechapel district. He was identified at that time and has been identified by various researchers since that time as being a prime suspect in the still unsolved Jack the Ripper murders. Following an arrest on November the 7th, 1888, for gross indecency, Tumblety fled the country on November the 20th under an assumed name and quickly made his way back to the United States, where he died a few years later. What are the odds that the very same guy would be suspected of involvement in two such completely different and seemingly connected crimes? Two crimes separated by an ocean and the passage of nearly 2.5 decades. Wow. Okay. This is just, this is beyond being weird. But let's imagine that it's the evening of April the 14th, 1865, and you're John Wilkes Booth. Your mission, should you decide to accept it, is to assassinate the president in a crowded theater in the middle of Washington, which at the time is heavily fortified and militarized because, you know, they're war. You know, in the South, they still don't trust them. And the enemy's base of operations in Richmond, Virginia, is only 100 miles away. So the nation's capital is crawling with armed military personnel, armed police patrols, and armed thugs under the employ of Lafayette Baker and Edwin Stanton. Your mission is obviously not going to be easy. The president is under armed guard, or at least he was supposed to until the guy went across the street and got drunk. He's also supposed to be in the company of General Ulysses S. Grant, who was always known to be armed. But somehow Grant fortuitously opted to get the hell out of Washington just hours before he was to have accompanied the Lincolns to the theater. But there's no way that John Wilkes Booth knew that, just as he didn't know that Parker would desert his post in front an armed police officer on the entrance door to the booth where the president was sitting. And there will be no shortage of other armed military and civilian personnel in Ford's theater, including Army Captain Theodore McGowan, who is seated very near the door to Lincoln's box seats. Okay, consider all that. So you have to assume that you're going to have to get past at least two armed attendants and probably more just to get to the president. And you're going to have to do that without firing a shot, since you have only one shot. And you need to save that for Abe, because knowing all of these armed people were there, you take a single shot Derringer to the dance. People, that's absolutely preposterous, because it's known that Booth owned revolvers. Well, the only realistic chance that Booth had of killing Lincoln with this wildly inaccurate weapon is by sneaking up behind him and delivering a contact wound to his head. So you're going to have to get past the guards. You're going to have to get past Grant. You're going to have to, and you only take a single shot pistol. So you might have to kill Grant. How are you going to do that? You're going to bludgeon him to death with your empty Derringer? This is unreal. Well, you're supposedly not on a suicide mission. So even if you somehow manage to successfully execute the president and presumably General Grant as well, you're still going to have some major problems on your hands. First of all, you're going to have to make your escape from a theater full of people, many of them who were armed. Many of them were military. Because in April 1865, the beginning of the era that would be mythologized as the Wild West days, there were guns everywhere, and everyone is packing one. And you, of course, will have blown your wad and will be unarmed. If you somehow manage to make your way out of the theater, then you will face the daunting prospect of making your way out of the city and across the Potomac River. Well, again, the District of Columbia is swarming with military, armed spies, armed police, as well as many armed citizens. Because back then, they didn't have all the gun control. And the only means of defending yourself will be with a dagger with all of those people around you. Now, where does this make any sense whatsoever? Well, your goal, at least Booth's goal, was to try to reach the Navy Yard Bridge, which would get him across the Potomac and into safety. But even if you got to it, you had a serious obstacle to overcome. The bridge has a curfew, and the armed guards are under strict orders not to allow anyone to cross without explicit authorization, including a code or password. If attempt to cross in any way without that, you'll be shot. Well, how did Booth get the password to get across the Naval Bridge? And then why did Edwin Stanton not mention this in any kind of telegraph communications for hours? Well, anyway, if you're Booth, you have just set up a very ambitious goal for yourself. You got to get to the president, who's sitting in a private box in a crowded theater with allegedly two armed attendants. You must then kill the president with a single shot because your weapon doesn't allow for second chances. And then you somehow got to kill General Grant because that's part of your mission. You must then, in an unarmed state, make an escape first from the theater and then from the city. And then you must get past an armed guard at the bridge. And you're going to do that with just one bullet. Hard to see how anything could go wrong with such a wonderful planned execution, huh? Well, it just does not make sense. That part is just absolutely incredible to even stop and think about, is it not? Well, there are other things you might want to consider, such as not committing the crime as John Wilkes Booth did. You are, after all, a famous stage actor, which means that you are also a wardrobe and a makeup guy. In that era, you and your contemporaries have to handle those duties yourselves. So you travel with a couple of large trunks full of wigs and fake beards and all of the makeup and all the other stuff. Booth could have easily put on a convincing disguise so as not to be easily recognized. Then he wouldn't have to worry about getting out of the city alive. All he would have to do is to make it out of the theater, quickly ditch the disguise, and then circle around and go back into the crowd at the theater and never arouse any suspicion at all. But he didn't do that, did he? He jumped down onto the stage, breaking an ankle or severely damaging an ankle, so everyone could see him. Help me out here, folks. How does that make any sense? Well, you know, even if you manage to make an escape from D.C., your lifestyle and career will be distant memories. All the fame, all of the female adoration, and if you start looking into all of the females involved with John Wilkes Booth, it is absolutely incredible. But anyway, all the success, all the wealth, everything would be gone for John Wilkes Booth if you committed the crime as he did. So why would he not have put on a disguise? Why would he have not replaced the Derringer with a revolver or maybe two revolvers? And maybe having an accomplice along for additional firepower? He had quite a few co-conspirators to choose from, didn't he? And you might also want to consider, why would you want to do it in a crowded theater? According to many of the actual documents, Lincoln ignored advice from aides and was known to stroll around Washington, D.C. completely unescorted at times. Why, if you knew that, and allegedly there was a kidnapping plot prior to the assassination plot, so why would you have not, why would you go to the theater? That just doesn't make sense. In summary, then, his best bet would have been to make the attempt on Lincoln's life when he was alone and unprotected. But he didn't. He picked a crowded theater. Well, as I said before, you probably want to bring along something besides a single-shot Derringer, just in case you might need it. And if he was determined again to do it in a theater, why not a disguise? Especially being an actor. The dumbest thing Booth could have done, and he wasn't known for being dumb, was to do it the way he did it. Just doesn't make sense, folks. But meanwhile, Booth's comrade in arms, one Lewis Payne or Lewis Powell, depending on which evidence you have, he had the difficult task ahead of him as well. His goal or mission was to kill Lincoln's Secretary of State, William Seward, who is recuperating at his stately manor in the heart of D.C. after being severely injured in a fall from a horse-drawn carriage just a few days before this. Seward had suffered a broken jaw, a broken arm, torn ligaments in his foot, and heavy bruising over much of his body. The 63-year-old Secretary of State is therefore physically vulnerable, but assassinating him is still not going to be easy. Here comes the last rebel. We'll be back with you in a few, folks.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.